How is Japan faring? It's been 7 months since the earthquake and tsunami. There are still hot spots of radiation fallout from the damaged Fukushima nuclear power plants. Last week, the government approved an additional $158 billion to rebuild the tsunami-battered northern coast and try to prevent companies like Panasonic and Nissan from shifting even more production elsewhere. But how are people coping? We see pictures still of towns completely reduced to rubble, piles of debris, no end in sight. Let's start this look with Jonathan Levine Ogura. You might remember we spoke with him right after the tsunami. He lives a little inland, but was organizing and delivering aid to people in need along the coast. He was born in New Jersey. He now lives with his family in Japan, teaches English in Iwate, about 100 miles north of the Fukushima plants. Jonathan, you say in your area, inland, things appear normal, but they aren't. What are the problems? Is it these pockets of radiation?
I mean, radiation is certainly in the back of my mind. I mean, there was a scare about radiation in the rice because it's harvest time. This expert says this, another expert says that, but it never goes away. I mean, I think about my kids. My kids are 5 and 7 years old, and people have asked me, why don't you leave? And you know, the food's contaminated and all that. Well, I mean, to be honest, there is a feeling of Russian roulette. And there's I'm playing the game of Russian roulette.
What is your answer? Why don't you leave?
Would you leave a burning house with your family living in it? That's the way I feel. My life is.
And you feel you couldn't uproot them and take them?
No. Yeah. No, I can't.
We know that a couple hundred people marched on the headquarters of the Tokyo Electric Power Company, which owns the Fukushima power plant that blew. Tens of thousands of people took part in an anti-nuclear protest last month. So what's your sense of the mood of the people?
People just want to get back up with their lives and go back to as normal as possible. That's not possible for the people on the coast. Many of them are living in prefab homes. Some people are still living in gymnasiums. And if they're in those shelters, they're still given government aid and food. But the problem is that they don't want to leave is because they don't have jobs. They've lost everything. And the government is basically still, it's slow. Let me just say it's slow. People are not satisfied. The people are very patient, but there seems to be an underlying feeling of disbelief. And when will we ever get back to normal? We visited some friends during the Obon holidays, the Buddhist ancestor worship holidays. They're living day to day without any work, or the only money that they have is what was in the bank. It was very difficult for them to talk about what had happened from March 11th.
Yeah. And there's things that we might not think of immediately, but for instance, something about the wood from the region that was devastated. What's the story there?
Yeah. The wood. You've heard that because Takata had a beautiful pine-lined beach. Every single pine was destroyed in the tsunami, except for one, and that's a symbol of the town. And during the Obon holidays, they build bonfires. It's a beacon to tell people to come back home, to tell the spirits to come back home. And there's a big bonfire in Kyoto that is that's very symbolic of the ancestor Obon holidays. And the city of Rikuzen Takara wanted to donate some wood as an offering. People in Kyoto, they rejected it because they thought that it was contaminated with radiation. It was a kind of a stab in the back. There's another story. The city of Ofunato, they've got tons and tons of debris. I mean, tons and metal. One of the southern cities, or western cities in Japan, they said they would take much of Ofunato's steel and recycle it. However, that got into the news, and there's this underlying, I don't know, something that is like visceral, I don't know if that's the correct word, but discrimination going on.
Yeah, people equating tsunami with radiation, when in fact they were two separate things.
Yeah, tsunami equals radiation. Wherever the tsunami came, there also radiation came. It's so sad. I mean, it gets you angry.
Well, Jonathan, is there something that you feel you'd want to hear from the government that you're not hearing? Again, you're not in an area that's devastated, but you're aware of the devastated areas, and you've got your own concerns about radiation. Is there something you'd want to hear or see done by the government that you're not hearing or seeing?
I want to see more action. Instead of hearing that everything's okay, I want to see more testing, especially the seafood. see more of the stuff out in the open. It doesn't seem that it actually happened, but it has happened, you know. And it seems like the Soviet Union did a better job in containing Chernobyl and keeping people safe than that they're doing here. I mean, we've personally, as a family, we built a new house here. So that's one of the reasons why we can't leave. But we've taken ourselves off the electrical grid and put on solar panels onto our house because we just want to, that's one of the things that we want to do is become more independent by putting solar panels on our house.
So
we can get away from nuclear energy.
Jonathan Levine Ogura, he teaches English and practices martial arts in Iwate, northern Japan, lives with his wife and two children. Jonathan, thanks for speaking with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Today we're talking about Japan, where half a year after the March 11th earthquake and tsunami, there's a sense that reconstruction is as stalled as the economy, which had been in a slump for the past two decades, and as stalled as the government, which last month brought in its eighth new prime minister in a decade. Well, not stalled if the governor of Miyagi Prefecture, Ground Zero after the tsunami, has anything to say about it. Governor Yoshihiro Murai has an 80-page plan to rebuild and a promise. He says he won't drink a drop of alcohol until every one of the remaining several hundred still homeless people in his region are in homes. There's a growing sense that Murai's grand vision for remaking the stricken region may jumpstart Japan. Aki Ito is economics reporter for Bloomberg News in Tokyo. Aki, welcome.
Hi.
Give us some context for this, you know, especially with the lost decades of the economy in Japan that preceded the tsunami. You know, just give us some sense of why this governor is standing out so much.
We were really interested in the character of Yoshihiro Murai because he was a man who is making these very ambitious proposals. He's also a very interesting guy himself, a former military helicopter pilot, educated from this very elite institution in Tokyo that educates the Japan's political elite. And he was pushing forward with a lot of proposals, even if they were a little bit controversial.
Well, one of them, even before the earthquake, was that he brought 2,200 jobs to his region by raising levies on existing businesses in order to fund tax breaks for new factories. That's pretty bold.
Yeah, absolutely was. We spoke to a lot of businessmen in Sendai, which is the capital of Miyagi, and we asked why they actually really liked him when you know, he was raising taxes on them. And they said, well, like, our prefecture had been stalling for so long that we were just waiting for something to come and change things around.
Well, and what is his new plan for post-tsunami reconstruction? The gist of it seems to be to incentivize other businesses to come to the area through some sort of economic zones. Tell us more about that.
That's right. So he wants to attract new businesses to come into Miyagi because basically a lot of the jobs were just wiped away by the earthquake and the tsunami. And he wants to bring most of these businesses in through either farming or fishing, both industries of which have been very heavily regulated. There's been this system in place since basically right after World War II, where these fishery cooperatives have had complete dominance over who gets fishing licenses in their harbors. And so basically big businesses, or even small businesses actually, haven't been able to go in and fish commercially. And so what the governor wants to do is he wants to level the playing field. He wants to make it easier for these outside businesses to come in without getting these memberships in these cooperatives.
He would set up eight special economic zones and businesses would move there, but if they did, they'd be exempt from levies for 10 years. Now, is this seen as it would be in this country, you know, getting rid of regulations and giving tax breaks? That would be seen as, you know, political or ideological. How's that seen there?
I initially approached the story thinking that it was very much this corporatist plan, but when we were actually up there in the Northeast reporting on the story, we were speaking to very small business owners. We were also speaking to, you know, normal people running very small shops, things like that, and Very few people had the sense that it was this plan for a big business to basically take over. They were very happy about this prospect that businesses might be able to come in and create more jobs for the local economy. There's just so much debris out there. We were speaking to the head of a fishery union there, and you know, he said he wasn't able to even just basically walk across town for 2 weeks. So things had improved, but it's still very overwhelming to be there.
And also, Japan has had to rebuild before after the Kobe earthquake, and the criticism is, it's hard to put it any other way, but they didn't take advantage of the disaster by building better. They just rebuilt the way things were. Is there a sense that Governor Murai is being listened to by the government and that his plans might be implemented? And is there a sense that the region might actually be able to go forward and build better and do things in a more advanced way to almost take advantage of this horrible tragedy?
You know, when I first started reporting on this story, it was maybe like about mid-June, and you know, the governor's plans were still in the middle of being developed. And I was speaking to a lot of people about his ideas, and everyone was saying, yeah, they're great ideas, but there's no way the central government's going to approve them. You know, these very ambitious proposals like exempting companies from paying taxes on their profits for 10 years. I mean, the effective corporate tax rate in Japan as benchmarked in Tokyo is 41%. So getting rid of that was something that was very bold, and most people thought definitely wasn't going to happen. But, you know, actually the day that this story ran, October 11th, the government's tax panel announced that it was going to exempt companies that build new facilities within these special zones from paying taxes on their profits for 5 years. So not 10 years, but 5 years, and that was still very ambitious. So there's this growing sense that the central government is really trying to get its act together to let Murai do what he wants to do.
The politicians must be feeling the frustration of the people there, even though we understand that of the 300,000 people at the peak, there's now, what, maybe 300 people who still are homeless. Politicians must be feeling the frustration.
Absolutely. There's this growing sense that the central government hasn't been able to do very much for these residents in Miyagi, and a lot of people have described what's happening in Tokyo as just a complete breakdown of the national political process.
But still, 300,000 homeless down to about 300, it seems like the governor may be able to have a drink soon.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, yeah, maybe in a month or so.
Aki Ito, economics reporter for Bloomberg News in Tokyo. Thank you.
Thank you.